Finally, they would also study similar Christian missions involved in aid and development. And as a result of these meetings and recommendations, an Erder division was founded and met for the first time on March 23rd, 1983. A key figure was the Reverend Don Raymer of the Pentecostal Church. He was appointed coordinator at the first meeting of Erder, and he explained the matching of funds concept between the church and its main source of external donations. So, for instance, provincial governments and eventually federal governments would set up these matching of funds, which is quite common now, but at the time it had to be explained more. The donations were from the Alberta Agency for International Development, CEDA, and to a smaller extent the Manitoba Council for International Cooperation. Saskatchewan later chipped in too. Individual projects were also discussed, and a theme that emerged was, quote, the conflict of interest that missionaries in the field faced when juggling their religious duties with development project pressures. So they wanted to keep the missionaries separate and to concentrate on proselytization and keep development in a separate silo. The initial meeting outlined an action plan to define Erder's philosophy and policy, as well as its promotion and financial standing. Plans were also proposed to designate missionaries for the spiritual elements of the projects, but lay persons would be engaged to participate in the practical objectives of future development work. Establishing partnerships with other evangelical aid organizations, and an initial strategy of choosing projects where the Overseas Mission Board had experience were also determined as goals. So worldly well-being through foreign aid and development and evangelization were now an explicit part of the same mission for the Pentecostal Church. For the immediate future, Erder would remain a division of the Overseas Mission Board, and it was given us mandate to prepare new projects, seek funding, disseminate new ways of working with Pentecostal parishioners, as well as canvassing for engagement and development work from church lay people. Significantly, however, Don Raymer gave a presentation on the concept of the Canadian Food Grants Plan, which is still operational. It's, I think, one of the third largest provider of food aid, Canadian food aid, at the moment. It was successful in gaining a motion through the PAOC that Erder, this new aid organization, would become a member of this Canadian Food Grants Bank, and that Raymer and another fellow, Terry Gustafson, would represent Erder as bank board members. So in 1983, Mennonites, along with four other Christian organizations, formed a new version of the Canadian Food Grants Bank. And they were followed by full membership by Erder and the United Church in 1984. And Erder's participation in the Food Grants Bank was the result of Raymer's contact with other evangelical and mainline Christian churches that were receiving urgent needs assessments from their missionaries on this mounting crisis that was beginning in Ethiopia in the early 1980s. These assessments were typical of Christian missions, the early warning system, which had been a common theme throughout the 20th century. And this early warning system had influenced humanitarian responses in times of crisis by NGOs, again, such as Oxfam in the 60s and 70s. They heard these things coming from the missionaries. There's a drought going on. It's getting terrible. You know, we'll do something. So it was this kind of alarm, if you would, through the missionary contact. Major Canadian churches sent fact-finding missions to Ethiopia, including Raymer for Erder. And while in Ethiopia, these envoys began to formulate how they could work together for a coordinated response to this, what was going to be a massive crisis. So this coming together of major Canadian churches pushed Erder and his partners into the major aid and development stream within relief and development practices at the time. it was kind of and it must have been a huge learning curve. They've gone from small scale projects to this huge humanitarian crisis in a very short time. Each Christian group was assigned, in the bank, was assigned an equity account. And this system allowed for each group to assign funds to its own projects if desired, or pool their equity with other groups for larger emergency projects if need be. So in large scale emergencies, where equity was shared between churches, a lead partner was assigned. And this is especially useful for Christian groups that didn't have personnel on the ground in somewhere where they saw a need. So, and again, this sharing of resources between churches and also the sharing of what the equity they had in the food grains bank that they received through donations from prairie farmers, but also from parishioners. Other members could share resources when one particular church responding to a crisis didn't have enough equity in their account. And this equity system also helped with overlap. If more than one food grains bank partner was on the ground, they would coordinate and work in different areas to avoid double aid. And it also helped to allow churches to respond to their own constituents' concerns. And this became increasingly important as impetus for foreign aid, foreign relief shifted from missionary reports in the field to televised and print reports of humanitarian emergencies that tugged on the emotions of individual church members, prompting them to canvass their local ministers or politicians. The actual equity in individual bank accounts came from donations from parishioners and Western farmers. And they were matched by CEDA that originally meant these donations at 3-1. So if you raised $1 million, CEDA would give you 3. This was later changed to 4-1. So it was quite lucrative. Money raised at the congregational level and the Western grain elevators, where farmers cash out their crops, they could direct, the farmers could direct where those grain donations would go. They could pick from a list, and many of them picked the food grain bank. The food grains bank would later lobby government to untie it, so it wasn't necessary to physically ship grain anymore. Practical, financial, expediency reasons eventually prevailed. And food aid could later be purchased either in country or in a neighboring country to where it was needed. And this growing relationship between the Food Grains Bank and CEDA meant that consistent funds through long-term contracts moved beyond project to project funding that the PAOC had received in the 1970s. So ERDA's participation in the Food Grain Bank saw their efforts passing going through the second lens of government scrutiny, which meant a greater professionalization, as these levels of stabilization would increase over time. There was a greater emphasis placed on human rights, gender and cultural sensitivity in project design and management underneath ERDO. In the first year of the Food Grants Bank, member churches raised nearly $1.6 million, and this is before matching funds. As news of the famine became more widespread, these donations increased over time to about $6.6 million for the year 84-85, and that's again before matching. But again, this idea of actually shipping this stuff over there was still prevalent in the mid-80s during the Ethiopian crisis. I don't want to bore you with the figures too much, but 83-84, the Food Grains Bank would deliver to Ethiopia for 230 metric tons. On top of that was $170 per ton for shipping a truck. It was absolutely ridiculous. So most of the funds raised, over half of the funds raised, would go in shipping. So eventually the Erdo and their partners pushed that, well, why don't we just buy it in Zimbabwe, right? Because Ethiopians didn't actually eat baguettes and breakfast cakes. They had milling meal. It was maize and corn. And they eventually bought that from Zimbabwe. So to the Jew, they actually pushed for this untying of aid. They were part of that pressure on the government to say, look, this is ridiculous. We've got to move on from tying this to the prairie farmer. The prairie farmer would still donate the grain, they just sell it elsewhere and get the money. Look at this, never had. So if the dollars and tonnages of grain donated to Erdo and the Canadian Food Grains Bank can be calculated using annual government and bank reports, the essence of what Erdo represented is harder to grasp. The phrases Christian response to hunger and earning the right to be heard are central to this essence. One question I asked the various interviewees while conducting research for the paper was, why just a Christian response? Why just Christian? Why not partner up with the other organizations like Oxfam? Why really partner up with them? And responses varied. The themes that reoccurred were the connections to like-minded people from other denominations, the international connections between churches, and the perceptions of high overhead expenses associated with groups like Oxfam and the UN. The biggest one was in fact the idea of trust. The Pentecostal church members interviewed simply didn't trust other secular NGOs as they did their Christian partners. So part of Erdo's Christian response to hunger was learning the right to be heard, and that became a catchphrase in publications and advertising during the famines. But determining that what impact Christian food aid had in converting or introducing Ethiopians to Canadian Pentecostalism is a difficult task. The theory of compassion is a can opener, or the idea of aid as a door to open Ethiopia or other recipient nations to Christian teaching. It's a tempting proposition to explain the massive amounts of money and effort poured into food aid programs by Erdo and other Christian groups. Elements of this do exist in what agencies like Erdo do, but the philosophical shift that occurred within the Pentecostal Assemblies of Canada in the later half of the 20th century that embraced the social and physical needs of the people, rather than a sprint to salvation before the rapture, this can't be ignored. This shift had a sincere and lasting impact on how mission was reconceived, repackaged, enacted upon from a very humanitarian basis. And strategists within the Pentecostal Church see the interpretation of Christian food aid as a crass or cynical vehicle for religious conversion is a portrayal rooted in flawed secular assumptions. I don't know, terrible. However, for the Pentecostals, the simple delivery of food aid is not enough. It's a disservice, as they see it. Or as one member of the assembly relayed, once somebody has been fed, or if you believe in the gospel, the best thing you can do is introduce them to the gospel. Gauging the success of Christian food aid in converting aid recipients to Pentecostalism is perplexing. The influence on domestic Canadian Pentecostal congregations is less so. Missions and aid boost levels of interest and monies collected. This connects with the realization in the church that Christendom is over, and that Euro-America itself is a mission field. So in this way, the earning the right to be heard was more about earning the right to be heard from the Pentecostals' own constituency, rather than from the recipients of aid and development. This new form of mission then was less about conversion overseas and more about a new found sense of global responsibility, as well as retention and conversion of Canadians. I'm very sorry for you.
you have a small gap between now and the next set of panels starting, but maybe we'll leave it to individual private conversations with panelists if you have some questions, so that if people do need to run out of the room and take a washroom break before the next panel, they can take the opportunity. But I thank you all for joining.
The next panel is at 4:15, so
yes. Yeah.